kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, and we're starting off the way we usually do. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
I'm yawn-tastic, man.
Yawn-tastic.
Yes, right. Tired. I went to the gym today, and I've been on a really weird consistency kick with it lately. I've gone about 4 to 5 times a week for the past 2 weeks, and it's weird and annoying in that I don't personally notice any changes at all. I'm still tired when I'm out of the gym. I'm still, still got my moobs. I'm still got some chumbawamba tummy here. And yet at the same time, I can't bring myself to stop doing it because I feel like something has to be happening. You can't put your body through that much effort and have no result. But the one thing that is starting to irk me is that I noticed that I'm not burning as much as I used to and whatnot, which I'm guessing is that effect people always say when your body gets used to a routine, but I don't need that shit. I need results. Body can't, it's driving me crazy. Lady was like, no, that's good. That means that if you're not in the red, if your heart rate isn't in the red, that means that your body's handling the training better. I'm like, I don't know. Red, I thought was good. She's like, oh no, red is bad. You're burning muscle and not fat. I'm like, what? I don't understand this body. It's stupid. Just lipo me. We call it even, bro. Apparently, lipo requires, medical consultation and a lot of money.
Yeah, so, lipo's expensive.
I had a boss who did it at one point. She did, I'm pretty sure it was lipo because they did it to her, and then they had to staple her stomach or something. So she couldn't eat any solids for 2 months. Her entire life was just bowls of soup and pureed stuff and just liquids.
All liquids. Baby food.
Pretty much. Given how much they took off of her, I want to wager she thought it was 100% worth it, but still. It's like, I said, it looked like, yeah, I'd be freaking kidding me. Of course, she wouldn't tell me how much it cost, but I'm like, maybe I need to look in the
shitload. That's how much it cost.
And Shorts probably looks at you like you crazy when you ask about it. Hey guys, I want to get this procedure done. It'll improve my quality of life, and you won't believe how much less medical issues I'll have after I get it done, I think, possibly, perhaps. And they're just like, no. Better hit that treadmill, buddy. Treadmill ain't working. I'm trying. Like, we don't care. We don't give a hoot magoo. But I figure I'm just going to try different stuff now. Start running in addition to the gym, though. I am a big dude, so obviously every run step's going to hit them knees hard, but maybe I'll just get used to it or something with the right footwear and supports and everything.
So. Yeah, that's why I like biking. When I would go to the gym, I would hop on the bikes just because it's less strain on the knees.
Oh, that's true. Biking and also rowing. I did like the rowing machines at my old gym. Put those things to work as well. And also there was something satisfying about hearing the roar sound every time you pulled it back. you were revving this machine, but you couldn't see where the rev, what you were powering up. You just knew you were revving. For all I know, I was powering the room that we were in at the time. Shit.
You were. That's where the generators are hooked up to.
Rowing machines. There we go. Keep this room lit up. You're paying a fee to keep our electric bill down. But of course, aside from that craziness, I've also gotten back into the Wii U of all things.
The Wii U.
Yeah, man. This month, the Rhythm and Pixels game of the month is Rayman Legends, and I'm not rebuying it. So I realized I had it, the original release that hit the Wii U, so I booted the old girl back up. She still runs like a champ, and it has me starting to think about maybe revisiting for the first time a number of Wii U games I've been sitting on, like Tokyo Mirage Sessions and Wonderful 101 and Bayonetta 2. Because I bought it on the Wii U and I didn't buy the Switch re-release.
I bought them both because I'm a consumer whore.
Oh, mercy you. I don't do that too often. I think the last time I can say I wholeheartedly was Hammer Down was I bought a La Mulana on the PC, and then I bought it on the Vita digitally. Then I bought it on the Vita from Limited Run Games because I love La Mulana that much. I wouldn't do that for any other game, probably. And now I'm waiting for the forever, mind you, for the freaking U.S. release of La Mulana 2 on the Switch. Because I will also double dip on that game because, again, I love that series so damn much. And it doesn't get nearly enough love for as frustrating but fun as it is. But
I need to play it more.
Yeah, honestly, you do, but keep an FAQ handy because you're not one for solving puzzles and taking notes. You're going to need it.
Oh, God.
I honestly, I played 3/4 of the way through the game before I cracked and needed it. I couldn't do it. There was like a point where the riddles started getting really cryptic, and sometimes they referred to stuff that I'd seen many hours prior in old areas of the game that I'd totally forgotten about. So people were like, oh yeah, once you get this thing, go back to the Tomb of Ancients and then jump into this wall, and then the pendant will activate and you'll fall forward. What? Yeah, whatever. And the thing about it is, like, for as frustrating as that may sound, I think it's like the perfect idea for a game that's meant to represent tomb diving as an Indiana Jones-like character. Because you ever watch those movies, and the puzzles are always so simple. Like, take the urn and place it with the weight of this thing. Like, I feel like if it was an ancient tomb that was held, that was, you know, preserved and set up by beings that weren't necessarily, you know, human, like they were maybe had maybe the godly influence, they would do a little bit more complicated stuff than 1 + 1 = blank. Devious. Like, no, give me some crazy shit. No one will ever solve this lost puzzle. The ancient staff of Stupocles will never be removed from this tomb. Ever.
Stupocles.
But like, it's honestly one of my favorite all-time franchises of games. Now just two games I can actually call it a franchise. One of my all-time favorite franchises ever made. It came out of nowhere, too, which is what I love about it. But yeah, that one I'm waiting for. That's my double dip. But yeah, I didn't double dip on Mario Deluxe. I didn't double dip on Tropical Freeze or Bayonetta 2. My logic was, if I have it on Wii U, it's going to stay there. But I do question if one day I'm going to put that mind for something very specific that might pop up. I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, I do want to get that again. Worth it. But for now, I'm just running it on there, like Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, all that good stuff. Though, admittedly, I think Kirby and the Rainbow Curse would make more sense on the Switch. Because it never made sense to me on the Wii U. Like, originally thought it would, and I'm glad it got it, that, you know, Canvas Curse got its eventual sequel. But when you play the game, the TV does nothing. Like, it's only for people who are watching you play it. Because it's a touchscreen game, everything happens on the one screen. So all it's doing is projecting what you're doing on the TV. And you can't play the game without the touchscreen. So the TV is useless.
Yeah.
But I still love that game. Still love it. Wasn't as good as Canvas Curse, though. Nothing's topping that.
I loved Canvas Curse. I didn't play the sequel, though. I didn't play that one. I should try picking that up sometime.
You should. Like I said, I personally don't think it was as good as Canvas Curse. But it was still a lot of fun. And It's a gameplay premise that I think is something worth appreciating. And the clay aspect of it was just visually stunning. They did a good job with making everything out of clay, or giving it a clay look, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wii U is a system that deserves way more love than it got. Though, I stand by the fact that the system itself, well, aside from the fact that Nintendo screwed up on the onboard memory, I don't know what they were thinking there, but the system's design left it open for a number of gameplay concepts that never got utilized because nobody took the leap to take a try on it. The closest we ever came was like certain stuff like on Nintendo Land, which is kind of frustrating in its own right. And we could have had a damn Pac-Man Versus sequel. We could have had a Dungeons and Dragons dungeon crawl, like those, you know, those dungeon crawls that everyone's playing now, these like, you know, roundabout run-throughs where everybody's working together. Imagine if it was on the Wii U, but the Dungeon Master held the gamepad and manipulated everything you were dealing with in the dungeon while you were running around. And their goal was to kill the players. The players' goal was to beat the Dungeon Master. And no matter how you slice it, you win something regardless of who wins. Like, if the players win, you unlock new items you can find in the dungeon runs. If the Game Master wins, they unlock new tools they can use against the heroes. It's just, it'd be genius. And it never happened. Because everybody punked out. It was like, what should we use the thing for? How about an inventory screen. Like, yeah, because I never remember doing it. And the only game that did that wisely, there was one game that really used that well, and I stand by my belief on it, and that was Zombie U. I liked how that game did it. You ever play that?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the fact that the inventory took place on the Wii U pad and the game didn't stop while you were rummaging, that was genius.
Yeah, the lack of the pause made it smart. So you had to keep an eye on what was going on the screen while still fucking around with your inventory.
Yeah, and there were definitely people out there were like, this is such a stupid thing. What am I supposed to do? It's like, I don't know, maybe fucking play a survival horror game? How about that? Like, it's not supposed to be convenient. That's actually genius of them to have done something like that. I loved it. And there was like a pause button if you had to like take go to the bathroom or something, but you shouldn't have to, if you weren't in your inventory, the fact that you had to look down was perfect. That was smart.
Yeah.
And again, very few games utilize the Wii U in such a way where you could say, this game only makes sense on this system. I'm going to buy it. And while I do like the Switch freaking caboodles, I don't think there's anything on the Switch that couldn't be done anywhere else, because the Switch's claim to fame is the portability. I guess there's that that weird like subtle motion thing that they had, but after like 1-2 Switch or whatever, what games utilize it?
Nothing really.
You don't think anything does. So it's pretty much been portable console that can be docked, which again I like very much. I love it, but. It ain't no Wii U on uniqueness and originality in the form of like game functionality. It's just a convenient device. And admittedly, I wish the Wii U could get another chance. Kind of like how the Dreamcast was back before every system had internet on it.
Yeah, true.
So, because the Dreamcast was a beauty too. Which, by the way, the anniversary is coming up.
Yes, it is. Somebody
like Sega was doing some sort of, hey, we missed the Dreamcast. And I think it's the 20-year anniversary. Here's the thing.
Yeah, like a Dreamcast collection on Xbox, Switch, and PlayStation. But no, it's just going to come and go and nothing's going to happen.
They're going to announce some new Sonic game with a new furry friend. Twigs the squirrel. Yeah. was it like Rolo? Was it Rolo the pill bug? There it is. There's another one for you.
Oh, Jesus. But
that's what they're going to do. It's going to be something ridiculous. We know what you guys want from a Sonic game, and we're not going to give it to you. Here's our another attempt at 3D and we can't seem to get right. Now Sonic is on Mars. Anti-gravity speed shoes.
I was going to say, this time he has magic shoes.
He's hanging out with Alice from Alice in Wonderland, the evil queen of hearts is stealing all the rings. What are you going to do, Sonic? Drink a potion and run real fast. But yeah, that's probably what they're going to friggin' doing. Still don't know how the company screws that franchise up so damn much. It's so sad. They just keep doing it. Sonic, what was it? Sonic Generations was good. And then they announced, like, it was like after that they went with like the those like weird Sonic, the movie Sonic game, the ones that were based on Sonic Boom, and they flopped. And then they announced that one game with like Sonic Forces, but when they originally announced the trailer, everybody was like, oh my god, it's Sonic Generations 2, it's classic Sonic and everything. And it was like, nope, you can make your own fursona and give him a grappling hook. That's what you guys want, right? No, we don't. No. And then they give us Sonic Mania, which was great, very much appreciated. And then they give us, well, I'm sure I'm out of order here, so no sue me, but then there was like, hey, you guys love that Sonic Racing Transform game, right? Yeah, we really did. Wish you did more of that. No. Team Sonic Racing. Take all those cool franchise characters out. Give you back more Sonic's friends. And then have you rubber band each other.
Yeah, that bugged me. I'm still mad that they took out all the Sega franchises from that game.
Yeah, it was the damn game was perfect. Sonic Racing Transform was perfect. And at the time, I liked it more than Mario Kart 8. And I ain't ashamed of it either. I played it way more than Mario Kart 8, despite Mario Kart 8's really cool anti-gravity mechanic. It was better. It was the better game. And they decided to just throw it all away for this rubber bando effect, which I will admit was a clever mechanic for a game. But they shouldn't have made an entire racing game around it. It should have been a mode, because it makes you need multiplayer. Yeah, there's AI, but that shit's not fun. To rely on AI to rubber band you? No, I need friends for that. And if I don't have my friends playing it with me, I want to play my own freaking race with Beat and Gum Not silver and diamond or whatever the hell new hedgehog they put out. Oh, silver, the damn hedgehog. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man. But
they messed it. They messed it up. They screwed the pooch.
So yes, they did.
Now I'm ready for whatever they come up with for this year, because there's got to be something. There's going to be something. But on the most likely, on the positive, at least we got Catherine coming. That's a good thing. Even if it is a remake plus, at least it'll be a good remake plus. Hopefully. Maybe.
I'm still mad that that's not coming to Xbox. That bugs me.
Maybe it'll get like a port after the fact or something. It is weird that they didn't do it, since the original was already there.
But I know. Come on. Like, friggin' come on, Atlas. Throw us a goddamn bone here or there.
Yeah, I also just love that I totally attributed that to Sega. Probably because of that damn, like, all the crossovers they've been doing. Like, now you've got Joker from Persona 5.
They're pretty much the same company. Atlas and Sega are basically the same. They're owned by Sammy.
They're all owned by Sammy. Yeah. But, you know, and that's probably why I did why I combined the two, because of that. But I think it's still, like, I always still try to think of it as their own entities, except for when they do collabs or whatever. But, yeah, I do. I want that game to be good really badly, because story be damned, I like the story just fine, but that puzzle gameplay was the real deal. I love that puzzle style gameplay. And again, can you think of a game that's played like Catherine? I can't.
No.
So in that regard, they could have built a whole franchise just off the puzzle aspect. That could have been like another Super Monkey Ball franchise. Maybe even chain down on Catherine. Now we got another game called Jennifer. I don't know. Roxanne. Ooh.
Oh, man. Since you're talking about Roxanne, I'm going to throw the red light on this conversation, because we got to start talking about reviews.
That is true.
Why Roxanne? How's that for a segue? Roxanne. You don't got to put on the red light.
That was really good. That was really good.
No, it wasn't. That was awful.
Oh, it was good. You hush your fuss. That was a good segue. You're getting better and better at those.
I was gonna do it when you were talking about dungeons. Like, speaking of dungeon crawlers, we should probably get to the reviews, but then you just went on that Sega tangent. And
speaking of Purple Monkey Dishwashing, you should talk about...
Speaking of dicks, we got to get to some reviews. Are you ready to get going?
Let's go.
All right, you got three games to talk about this week. The first one is called Omega Labyrinth Life, developed by Matrix Software, published by D3 Publisher, released August 1st on the Switch for $59.99. Take it easy in the latest edition of the series, where you buff your bust with every foe you defeat, Omega Labyrinth. Now, in addition to adventuring through dungeons, you can enjoy the finer things in life, like taking care of flowers, rebuilding the academy, and having a little fun on the side. Purnell, tell us about it.
I will have to say, just to start this off, this may be the one game that this show ever gets where you're speaking of dicks could have actually been a realistic segue into the game review.
Nice.
But so Omega Labyrinth. So I will have to say this game. Well, I'll go into the game first, the description first, and then I'll go into my thoughts on the game. So the premise of the game, as you mentioned earlier, well, you didn't say the fully. You start out as a character named Hinata, who shows up at this prestigious all-girls school that is known for its wonderful garden. And a day after coming to the school, something weird happens, and the magic garden, and special garden and all the flowers in it suddenly die, wither and die. And everyone decides to blame her for it, because why the hell not? So she goes off to prove that she did not do it by, of course, delving into mystery dungeons that just happened to be on the campus, and no one's surprised by it, whatever. So the way the game works is, if you've ever played a mystery dungeon game, the default form of this game is pretty much going to be that. But for those who have not, the idea is that you usually end up going into dungeons that have a specific number of floors in them. Each floor is randomly generated, and the characters wander around looking for the exit to each floor by exploring interconnected rectangular and square rooms, fighting monsters as they go. You find items on the ground, you pick them up. If they're identified, you can just put them on. If they're unidentified, you don't. Or rather, if they are identified, you have to identify them doing different specific things. And I'll get to how that works in this game shortly. But long story short, you run around, you kill things, you level up, and you get to the bottom, possibly fight a boss, and move on. What makes Omega Labyrinth so different in this regard? Well, baby, let me tell you, because it's really different. So, First and foremost, if you are not a fan of, like, I guess, ecchi, I guess I'll call it that style of like, stuff or whatever, this is not the game for you. But if you are indifferent or okay with it, then listen as I go on with this game explanation. So, as you're running around the dungeon, every once in a while you'll come across items that are unappraised, just like in any other mystery dungeon roguelike exploring game. However, in this game, the way that you reveal what they are is by performing something called a size up, in which case you spend some of the game's currency, which I'll also need to explain in a second, to perform something called a size up. What a size up is you take the object, which initially is a soft, gummy object, you put it between the character's breasts, and you give it a breast job, basically, until it elongates, solidifies, and releases a mist, which results in the item becoming revealed, and you know what the item is. It gets more interesting, and I'm going to give this a very straight review, so I'm not holding any of it back. So, in addition to that, as you explore the dungeons, as you kill enemies, typically in a roguelike game, you will get experience points. The experience points will level your character up, and when you exit the dungeon, you'll reset back to level one for future runs, meaning that you have to kind of balance out the experience you get or your equipment to do most of the damage until you level up your character. However, unlike other roguelike games, this one adds another interesting mechanic that goes along with this ecchi theme. That is Omega Power. Omega Power in this game is pretty much everything. It's the game's currency, which you use to spend at stores to buy things. It is what is used to level up skills, which I'll get into shortly as well. But the most upfront thing that it does is it increases the size of your character's breasts. Every time you kill a monster, Omega Power is released in addition to experience points. And for whatever reason in this universe, Omega Power is stored in your breasts. So the more Omega Power you get, the more your breasts grow. And after certain thresholds, you'll increase in cup size. The cup size of your character's breasts determines how powerful your character is. The bigger their breasts, the stronger they are. So, as weird as this may sound, there's an added mechanic to balancing out your character use. Because when you go into a dungeon, you can take one partner with you if you so choose. Every character in the game has a default bust size. And whenever you kill a monster, only the character who killed the monster gets the Omega Point bust enhancement, which means that if you want to balance out character growth and stats, you have to switch between the characters appropriately to have their bust grow in uniform. And it's interesting because the larger the breasts get, eventually they burst out of the uniform, and there you go. There's my attempt at a segue. Boom, baby.
I'm proud of you, Purnell.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Other items that exist in this game that are, obviously I'll go into some of those. So equipment that I mentioned earlier, the equipment that you typically use to be able to deal damage in dungeons that ends up being more important than leveling ultimately, can be found in dungeons and purchased at shops, either found in dungeons or out in the school grounds. But you also eventually unlock the means to synthesize equipment and combine them together to make more powerful gear. You can take items that you find, combine them to increase the stats, and also move around properties between the two. Like, you might get a weapon that says, you know, does bonus damage against reptile monsters. You can move that from your scythe to your fan, your paper fan, if you want. You can combine like weapons to get stat boosts on those weapons. And you can also use flowers that you acquire from the game's garden, which, again, I guess I'll get into shortly, to enhance the items as well. So as you grow flowers, you'll get petals, and the different petals can be used to add properties, such as the earlier mentioned ones, to your weapons. Now, the gardening aspect of the game is kind of dumb at first, but what I will say, and I'm glad I figured this out before doing the review, is that there's like a little like tutorials on the grounds that you come across. You want to do those as soon as possible, because eventually what happens is you'll get some improved aspects to this, but I'll go into that second. So the garden is an area all around the center of the school's campus. That's the place you run around in before going into dungeons. You find flower seeds throughout the game. You can also purchase them sometimes. You plant the flower seeds in the garden and then water the flowers with water and something else, which I'll get into. And eventually the flowers will grow. You can collect them and then use those for the weapon synthesization. I'm synthesizing that I mentioned earlier. So,
do I want to know what the other thing is?
You're going to find out, so no worries. Okay. All in due time. So, early on, the game is annoying with this flower arranging nonsense because you run around, you plant the flowers, and it's honestly kind of hard to tell what seeds are going at what spots in the campus and then what you're watering. So it becomes a little hard to keep up with everything. But eventually, you unlock the means to just manage it all from a bulletin board, which is those being a display. We say select which flower bed, tell which flowers you want to put in there, blah, blah, blah. It's much more streamlined and easy. And it kind of makes you wish they just did that in the first place instead of making you unlock the feature. Now, the thing that I mentioned earlier about unlocking new skills for your characters. You also, in addition to Omega Points, there's another currency in the game called Nectar. Nectar, I'm almost having trouble remembering where the nectar even comes from. I usually find it lying on the ground, or like I just get it from something, probably from the flowers. But what you do with this nectar is there's a greenhouse on the campus that you are allowed to go to with the girls. And you basically fondle the girls in the greenhouse.
Okay.
I'm not even making this up. You go to the greenhouse and you talk to like the lady who attends it or manages it, and you choose a certain skill set for a character. It's like Hinata Flash or Hinata Boost. And then you say which course level you want to take, either beginner, intermediate, or expert, which determines how much experience you get from the course. And then the game begins. And the game is a picture of the girl in some weird situation, whether she's like doing gymnastics or, I don't know, for whatever, you stand up against a wall in like a weird like prison outfit. I don't freaking know. And at this point, what the game tasks you to do is touch the girl in various orgasm or spots. I want to say orgasm, but there's like another word for it that's eluding me. It starts with an E. But anyway.
Erotic.
There we go. Just go with erotic. Erotic zones. Yeah, erogenous zones. Erogenous zones. Various erogenous zones you touch. And as this minigame progresses, the girl says, oh, wee, woo, various crap to indicate that she's enjoying it or not. Eventually, you'll get to a point where you end up stopping time so you can like just mash on the screen very fast to do like a really quick bonus to get her really excited. And there's another moment where you there's like a flower tattoo that starts to show up on her body as you do this, where eventually that becomes something you tap on very fast to get even more bonuses. And then eventually she orgasms, and then just the screen gets covered in stuff, and then it gets bottled, which you can then use to water the plants. Again, I am not making this up. So that is how you level up and get new skills in the game. So honestly, this game is
weird.
It's extremely weird. And I'm going to tell you something else too. And this is the oddest thing of all. I'm going to say it. So two things. One, you are able to skip the size up and the mini games I just mentioned. While the size up is one thing, the other mini game, you almost don't want to skip it if it comes down to the point where you're not enjoying that, because depending on how well you do it determines how much experience you get to get your new skills. And if you skip the mini game, you get a default amount. You don't get a potential higher amount by doing the game well. So you'll find yourself going, well, on one hand, I don't feel like doing this. On the other hand, I'm spending 3,000 nectar. I need to get the most I can get out of this. So you're like, all right, well, tap, 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 whatever. But here's the other thing that seemed really interesting to me that didn't even make sense until it happened. I got kind of desensitized to it all, which I guess happens. It happens in every damn thing else. But at first I was like, I'm doing what to these people? I'm tapping what to do this? Blech. And then Vinny was like, all right, I'm going to unlock level 2. Trying to unlock more stuff. Tap, tap, tap. All right, give me the juice. All right, spray it on the grass. Hey, Ruby goo. All right, now I got good flowers. And I just went and ran the motions. Because here's where it gets really interesting. My thoughts on this game are that once you get past all of this etchy and like perverted crap, it's honestly a quality standard roguelike game. It's an enjoyable game. It's not lacking in features. There's stage trials you can go into. There's like kind of like pre-built like scenarios where you can run through the dungeons and see if you can beat them. And if you do, you get a prize. It's got many like little quests that the characters in the game can give you, so you can actually try to acquire new stuff. I would say there's also some dialogue in regards to like getting to know the girls on the campus, but I didn't give two craps about that. The more I tried, the less I cared. I just wanted to do more dungeon diving. So, but there's a fair amount in this game to do. Honestly, I've been enjoying it. It's just due to the aspect of that stuff that I mentioned before, that in itself is going to be the hard draw or the hard line in the sand determining whether people want to try it or not. Though I will also say that there are other roguelike games that can be played out there, like Chocobo Everybody or whatever, which is also a good one. So it's not like this is the only game in town for this style of gameplay.
True.
But I will say that if you're okay, if you're in the camp that's really down for this stuff or indifferent to this stuff, I think this game is actually a decent title. I think it's a fun time. And it's a game that I'm going to continue to play because there's a lot to do in it once you get to the post game and all that stuff. So there is plenty to do. And I can see myself playing more of this game. Also worth mentioning, in case someone doesn't know anything about roguelikes, if you die in a dungeon and you didn't, you know, take the proper precautions to get out, you will lose all of your stuff. Though, I also got to mention this because you'll laugh your ass off possibly, is there's an item in this game that doesn't typically exist in, I guess it kind of does, but it's called a TFT petal. It is a rare flower petal that you can come across while you're exploring a dungeon. And if you die while you're wearing it, instead of immediately passing away and losing all your stuff, a fairy spirit from within the dungeon you're in will come to visit you. And she will play a game called Tit for Tat for you with you.
Oh, God.
Tit for Tat is literally rock, papers, and scissors with your tits. I was playing this game at a friend's house, and when the tit for tat game came up, I was like, I got to turn this off. I'll play it when I get home. But it's literally tit for tat. It's rock, paper, scissors with your breasts. So you have to move your breasts in two different directions. And based on the direction they moved in, determines whether it's rock, paper, or scissors. Why they didn't just say, I don't know, two breasts, one, I don't know. They could have come up with something, because I'm that guy who sat there trying to process, in what universe would this make any sense? Like, you're sitting there, you're just holding your jugs, and you're like, up, down, rock. Like, why?
Oh, my God.
How does that make any sense? I tried.
I don't think it does.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. And I laughed hard at it. Like, it's just, they could have named it something else. It could have just been like, I don't know, but, you know, bumping each other with your breasts, and whoever hits the hardest gets knocked back, and there's your mini game. Titty bumping. That makes sense. But rock, paper, titums, I can't wrap my head around it. I can't. I did it because it's part of the game, but I get too serious. And I was like, what is this? How does this make sense?
That's where they lose you. Everything else in the game, and that's where they lose you.
Tit for tat, man. I can't.
Well, overall, $60 on the game. What do you say?
I think it's a buy if you're okay with ecchi, but if you're not, then obviously this is not the game for you, because while some might say, well, yeah, you can skip the such and such, you can skip them. Let's be real here. That's not enough to make the game playable for someone who's not down with this stuff. It's just not. So either you're in or you're not. But if you're in, buy it. If you're not, keep on walking. Chocobo awesome. Everybody.
Chocobo Everybody. Next game to talk about is called Mutant Year Zero Road to Eden, developed by the Bearded Ladies, published by Funcom, released July 30th on the Switch for $39.99. The humans are all gone, scavenging through the remains of civilization. Are the mutants, deformed humanoids, and animals alike searching for salvation or just something to eat? To survive, you and your companions must venture out to explore the zone, a tactical adventure game combining the turn-based combat of XCOM with story, exploration, stealth, and strategy. We covered this one a couple of months ago, and we enjoyed it on the Xbox. Purnell, how is it on the Switch?
I've never played on any other system, so this is my first time with it. And quite frankly, I love the game. It is pretty much what XCOM was missing for me, which was that story. So, as you know, XCOM is a very solid gameplay system, but the story is really what you get out of it, because you name the characters, and you just kind of fascinate, you fantasize about, hey, I'm going to save America from aliens by doing stuff, whatever. But in this game, all the characters you find have personalities and stories behind them. You're playing through a scenario, and it's honestly a lot of fun to hear them have conversations with each other, whether it be just about getting to know each other or about artifacts that they find on the ground, because as you know, this game takes place after an apocalypse that happens in our present world, and we are referred to in their universe as the ancients, quote unquote. So they'll find something like an iPod on the ground, like an old beat up iPod that has a little charge in it. And I'm like, what is this thing? And they'll look at it, like, I think there's some kind of fruit analyzer.
Oh, Jesus.
And honestly, I laughed really hard at that. The guy's like, why the hell would you want to analyze fruit? And he's like, why would you not? I mean, they did it. The ancients knew something. I mean, they designed a device around it. So whatever. Who are you to question them? But it's a fantastic game. The gameplay styling is that you're walking around, like, exploring the world, but then the enemies that you would fight exist in the world itself. They're just walking around. They'll have conversations and stuff like that. And once you know you're in an environment where enemies are there, I love the fact that you can actually position your guys around and go like a little stealth mode, like hide them behind trees and stuff and prepare your ambush and then go, time to fight. And you trigger the battle and you just start skirmishing. It is a fantastic idea for a game. And it's not even that long, which is both good and bad, because it's good because it means the game doesn't overstay its welcome. It's bad because what if you want more? What if you want to keep your visit moving a little longer?
True. Is there any open world elements that can allow you to still free roam when it's done?
Not so much, because the way the game works is that when you go to, it's an overworld map, and you kind of go between locations. So it's like, say, I'm in Buster's backyard. I don't know. And then you're there. You're running around. You're exploring it. And we get to the exit or the edge of the area. You go to the world map, and whatever areas you can access from that exit point will be like, hey, you want to go here? And you go, yes. And now you're in the next area. There are a finite number of treasures, and I didn't explore heavily enough to know whether or not scrap replenishes itself or not. Scrap being the currency used to upgrade weaponry that your characters can use. So, to my understanding, once you've found everything in each area of the game, that's it. Like, there's no real incentive to go back unless you just want to grind out experience or something. But by that same token, like I said, like, it's a story driven game, because it's based off of an RPG, like a tabletop RPG series.
Yeah.
So they probably built it with that in mind. But once it's done with that, in that styling. Though there is a DLC included with this, which is nice. So you get a little bit more gameplay than the default users on other consoles got. So, but which honestly, for sure. This game, it's just a gem. All the characters feel very different from each other, because on one hand they can all just kind of mix and match equipment, like weaponry that they find on the ground and that gets tweaked and edited, but the upgrade trees are unique for every character. There are a few things that may show up on each character's list, but for the most part everyone has a few things that make them different from the others. So you'll upgrade them in a way that will ultimately make one character good for, like, shooting from high areas, which means you'll likely make that person your sniper, because why not? You'll have another character who's ultimately good for, like, knocking guys over and eating them raw, which means you'll make them your front brawler, So it's like stuff like that. But it's a beautiful package. It doesn't even make room for analysis paralysis, because the skill trees are not complicated. It's like it's basically like, here's two options, which then leads to one option, which leads to two options. That kind of thing. You're never sitting there going, well, I only have so many skill points and there's like 90 options here, so I guess I'm just going to hoard them like I do. No, you'll actually use them, because it's not hard to determine what's good, and if something's not too good, or if you can't decide for sure, you'll have enough experience points to get the next skill not too long from this. You'll just get it too. Not a big deal. So, I also like that the main handing holdout zone, which is called the Ark, which is where your home is and where you're branching out from to explore the world and find a place hopefully known as Eden that's being searched for by a guy named Hammond. That area, you're not running around the base trying to figure junk out. It's just here are a bunch of places. Select which one you want to go to. There's like five of them. And then when you go there, you know what the function is. This is what you can do. You can buy weapons here. You can enhance your weapons here. You can learn where to go next here. You can redeem artifacts here for skill bumps, or rather permanent perks. Like, it's very straightforward. It's not a bunch of time lost and wasted. It's just, here's a menu, do the stuff, get the hell out and get back to the game. It's very well done. The only downside I've come to have about this game, and I can't compare it to the other systems because I've never seen them, is that graphically this game could use some work. So for starters, when you're running around on the map, items show up on the, in the form of like blinking objects sometimes, or like a light will like hit something. And you're like, okay, there's a thing there. I got to go pick that up. But there's like weird glare issues that I've come across in certain areas. Like, it's like, it might be a puddle of water, or maybe it's not. I honestly don't know, because just the way the game displays it, and it'll just look like something should be there, which means you'll want to explore and check it, just because you might, you don't know if something's there or not. You can't tell, because it doesn't, the good stuff doesn't stand out because the ground has this weird glare effect sometimes, yeah, which makes you think something could be there. Also, the character models aren't anything to write home about. It's, I could take it or leave that. But so it makes it hard to tell whether or not, like, maybe it's better on another system because of the graphic change. I don't know. I haven't compared it. But what I will say is that, having only played it on the Switch, I did enjoy the portability aspect of it, and it did not make the game any less fun for me. I loved playing it. I did kind of go, oh man, I wish this looked nicer. But then I got over and said, I'm enjoying the game too much to give a crap. Hey, whatever. Now, I guess if this game was more mediocre or lackluster, the graphics would have weighed it down more. Like, man, if only this looked nicer, I could have just ignored the fact that this game is bland.
Yeah.
But no, the game really does do the trick. It's a treat. And aside from XCOM, I can't think of any other games like this. Like, this game flows very well. It feels good to play. I like setting up those ambushes. I like seeing a situation go, crap, I can't beat these guys right now. Maybe I can go around and find another place to hit them from. Or maybe wait for one of their guys to walk off. We'll just hide behind the trees. And when he shows up, bam, knock him out. Because you can like use like silencer pistols or whatever, shoot the guy and kill him so his friends don't hear, and then start calling him out. It's so good. Combat in this game is great. And I have to respect the company that has 4 difficulty settings, but then on the highest difficulty say, this is how the game was meant to be played.
Yes.
And you can bet your ass I picked the hardest difficulty because of course thank you, did. You better believe it. I mean, admittedly, due to the fact that I did a review for the game, I was considering going with normal, but as I flipped through each thing and it outright said, this is how we meant for the game to be played, I was like, well, I have to respect that. I can't not do this.
I would take
it. Get it in.
I'm a pussy.
Yeah, but that's the other thing about this. Like, due to the fact that the game isn't meat a hefty long, you may as well just go in and go hard. Yeah. I mean, it stays the gameplay, and when you're done, you feel like you've mastered it.
Well, overall, but $40 on it, what do you think?
I think it's worth every damn penny. I mean, graphically, I could take it or leave it, but the gameplay more than won me over, and I think it's worth your cash. If you feel as though graphics are that big of a deal, there are 2 other consoles, 3 if it's on Steam, that I believe also have it, and you can try it there. But one way or the other, you need to play this game. You need to like it.
Awesome. We got one final game to talk about with you that is called Gravekeeper, developed by Megapixel Studio, published by Forever Entertainment, released August 8th on the Switch for $9.99. You are the bounty hunter and walked into the Forbidden Stronghold. It is taken by the Skeleton King. To collect all the treasures, you must kill him first. Purnell, tell us about Gravekeeper.
Gravekeeper. All right, so this game is a hack and slash top-down game, and the idea is that every level you will be assaulted by a variety of skeletons, different skeletal monsters, some that melee, some that throw bolts at you. Like when I say bolts, I mean like crossbow bolts. And you are trying to survive their onslaughts in the form of waves. The way you do that is by having 3 different forms of attack. You have a melee attack, which can be by swinging your weapon. There is a crossbow you can use for distance combat. And you have a skill that you can use that will allow you to do a skill. So
shocking.
You utilize a shocker, I know, right? And as you play the game, you'll be utilizing these 3 buttons to take care of business. At the end of every 5 stages, a boss will appear. And once you beat that boss, you will get a treasure chest. That treasure chest will have in it new equipment or skills. They have a rating between like minor to average to like, you know, like the levels of rarity, I should say. So when you get these things, you get the option of equipping them instead of the current gear you're having that you're wearing. And they always have like one like sort of perk. Like one might say, for example, an armor might say plus 40 defense 40% defense when your hit points are below 50%, or a weapon might say 2% bonus critical damage chance or something like that. So you'll be equipping these things as you get them from beating the bosses on each level or set of levels. Also, as you kill monsters, you will acquire gold coins. Gold coins of which can be used to upgrade any item that you find to increase the damage or defense output. Skills are also things you find just like equipment. You can only have one skill active at a time, but when you equip it, you use the skill button to utilize its effect or whatever. And after you use a skill, there's a cooldown, and then it reignites and you can use it again. So as you play through the game, eventually you'll get to a point where, let's say like level 30 or so, where the game will allow you to fight the Skeleton King. When you fight the Skeleton King, you will, if you beat him, you will get a bonus, like a reward, like, you know, more gems, which can be used in the game's store, which I'll get to shortly, or more money in general. And also like these runes, which you can use, which honestly, I barely even dabbled with the runes. I just did everything else. So after you beat the Skeleton King, the game kicks you back to level one and you can do it all over again. As in, all your levels get reset, all your gear gets reset, the works. So the idea is that the further you play into the game before you take on the Skeleton King, the better your reward should be. And it's supposed to indicate that you get a pretty solid loop of gameplay in. You know, basically, go far, beat him, get reset, but you have money or access to things that can be used to make your additional future run stronger, so you can just go further and further into the game. And that's the way the game is designed. Now, the thing I mentioned also was like there's like a in-game store, because this game I think was originally like a mobile game that was converted, and what they ended up doing was like there's like the store's currency is acquired by beating the Skeleton King, and sometimes every once in a blue moon I feel like I've gotten it from other ways too, like maybe from like the game's missions or daily quests. But it can be used to purchase other like items, like more runes, essentially. Now, honestly, on paper, this sounds like a great time. And early on, I actually did very much find myself enjoying the loop. And it was nothing to write home about, but it was fun to play. But the problem that I started to have with the game is that it all felt very samey. And what I mean by that is, like I said, every five stages is a boss, and you go to the next area with five stages. However, there's only like three or four different areas you go to. So, like, it's a graveyard or another graveyard or a tomb. And that's all that I ever really came across. Like, the variety wasn't 100% there. Now, in addition to that, the enemy types are pretty much always skeletons. Like, just various types of skeletons or, like, zombie-type monsters. So, like, it'll be like, hey, this guy's walking up to you. Whack him. Here's a guy. Whack him. But every once in a while, he may throw bolts, and you don't know he's going to throw bolts. He just has the means to do it. Now, crap, you got to fight him. But for the most part, these are the two types of guys you fight. And you might eventually fight like these magicians in the keep, but they're basically bolt throwers too. And then the bosses, there's a few different bosses, but for the most part, I kind of had the same strategy for all of them, which was fire bolts at them and use my skill when they got too close, because there's a sort of like a damage bomb. There's an invincibility frame there where you're like, okay, I'm about to get hit. Use my skill. Okay, I got room to breathe. Run away. And I just kept doing that. I exploited that system. And also, when enemies are throwing stuff at you, it gets to be pretty tough to dodge, because your attacks leave you pretty vulnerable, both your main, your ranged, and your melee. So you find yourself in situations where, as you're trying to swing, if you're basically like, oh crap, get absorbed that hit, because there ain't much I'm going to do to get away from it. There's no like tactical roll button or anything like that. So it got to the point where I was like, okay, I can see myself playing this in like small doses, but if I were to try to really dive into this game, I'd lose interest. So it's hard to say how I feel about it in that regard. Is it a bad game? No, I don't think it's a bad game. Not quite at all. But is it a game that I found to be exciting and riveting? Also, not so much that. It was more like the kind of game I would play just to give me something to do while like waiting in line, or, you know, just trying to kill some time here and there.
So it feels like a mobile game.
Exactly. So it's an interesting thing that you come across there, because you find yourself thinking, okay, so how do you feel about this game? And it's like, it's a mobile game. That's about the gist of it. And complete with the typos. Because there were a number of those, like typos and just like weird sentence fragments. But again, as you know about me, when it comes to that kind of stuff, if it's a game like this, I only bring them up as a joking sense because it don't mean but so much. You know what you're in the game for. You're here to do the loop. You're not here for a deep story or like characterization or anything. So whenever I have a sentence, I'm like, oh, they totally broke that sentence fragment. But in the end, it just was like something that you just, it was just like means to get past the point where the character's like, okay, I've explained how the game, oh, something worth mentioning, and that kind of annoyed me. Every time you restart the loop, the character has to deal with the tutorial stuff again. I don't know what
you can't skip it.
Nope. So you beat the Skeleton King and you go back to level one and she's back to telling you, so when you kill this monster, you get an item. Press A to equip it. Like, no, I know how to do that. I just beat the Skeleton King. Why are you telling me this again? But she does, and it's annoying. But yeah, I don't know what they were thinking with that little tidbit. Should have been a one and done. And also, it's not the game's that complicated. So even if it's like, well, what if someone puts the game down, they come back and they forget how to play the game. Why would you beat the Skeleton King, then stop playing the game, and then come back 2 months later to try it again? Like, I don't remember how to swing a weapon. Shit. No, you're not going to. No one's going to do that. No one's going to do that. Thereby, it makes no sense to just have you have to deal with that every time you play a fresh run. It makes no sense. So
your overall verdict for $10?
Low tier, try it, otherwise deny it, because I don't want to feel like a flat out deny it, because it's not a bad game. It's just I feel like there's very little that would draw me to this when I could play pretty much any other hack and slasher on the market on the Switch. But so that's why I'm saying at least it's a lower tier try it, but I can't go much higher than that.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I might give it a shot. It sounds interesting. I might give it a go. I'll keep it on my wish list.
If you do, you'll have to tell me how you feel about it.
And my cats are making some weird noise in the kitchen. I don't know what the hell.
They heard the meow. They just heard that. It's like, what's going on? There's a party. That's right. Cats heard it. They overheard all.
Oh, Lord. Pernell, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words?
If you can and you're capable, donate blood. Everyone needs it. Almost everyone can give it. You should give it if you can.
All right. Next up, we got Tim Ekibus joining. Tim, how are you doing?
Good. Great. Tired.
How was your weekend?
It was fantastic. Yes, as foretold, I went to Toronto, Canada. Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And witnessed NXT TakeOver Toronto live and in person, and then went back home and watched SummerSlam in my house while putting together an IKEA dresser, and then woke up the next morning and watched the finals of the New Japan G1 Climax 29 tournament.
Oh, damn. You had a lot of wrestling to watch.
It was a lot of wrestling, and it was actually, you know, SummerSlam, not the, you know, SummerSlam was pretty solid. Pretty solid show.
It was. NXT, you know, was awesome, obviously.
NXT was awesome, and being there live was awesome. That was a man. It was a heck of a show. You know, my wife is not much of a wrestling fan, and she came. She let me drag her along to this, and she ended up getting really into it and really dug it. For the most part. She was not into the first fall of the main event, which I was super into, but everything else, yeah. I mean, that was a hell of a show. The tag team match was great and awesome.
Tag team match, by the way, of the entire weekend.
Yeah. Well, the one in NXT. Right.
They did add one. That's right. Yes, they added one.
The women's tag. Yeah, they did throw in that women's tag, but... Yeah, Angelo Dawkins, a lot bigger than he appears on TV. And Montez Ford gets extremely high when he does those high, you know, high moves off the top rope and shit. Apparently he's 6'5", which he appears to be, I guess, shorter than that on TV. But, like, man, that dude can move. Like, holy crap, his drop kick, like, looked like he was just going to fly out of the ring. Like... is insane. Yeah, it's a lot different. It's the first time I've been there live in 15 years for an event, and probably one of the closer seats I've had to a quote-unquote pay-per-view event. Usually I'm up in the freaking nosebleeds. Yeah, so I had like a three-quarters view of the ring. We were behind like the post on the right side, closer to the camera. But yeah, that was great. I mean, like the Io Shirai Candice LeRae match was fantastic.
Oh yeah, that was
really good. Candice LeRae is awesome. Apparently, some people online were saying that Io carried her through that match, and that is bullshit because Candice LeRae is very good at her job. And her job there was to make Io look like an unstoppable monster, mm-hmm. and just like, that was great. I think the my favorite match and my wife's favorite match was the North American Triple Threat, because they just didn't stop. Like, that was all over the place. My wife described it as like watching a Looney Tunes episode, how all over the place everything was. But like, yeah, I posted on Twitter, but Velveteen Dream is so freaking good. He is so goddamn good. Because I was thinking, like, during the you know, maybe like the first few matches, you know, even where I'm sitting, you know, some of them strikes looked like, you know, they look worked. You know, those are worked punches, worked kicks. Like, there were some angles. I don't remember who it was who did like a high kick into the corner that was like opposite us, and we're like, oh, that was not close to her face at all. I mean, for the camera, it probably looked good, but from where we were, like, that was a strong miss. But it's just like Velveteen Dream, all of because he's very old school in his style, in that he's like a very like 80s like striker, I guess. Like, he does freaking double axe handles and these big punches and big boots. You know, obviously he emulates older stars from time to time, but everything he did looked so good for the arena. Like, even if it looks goofy, it's just because he's so exaggerated in everything he does. Like, you know, he takes a hit and he does like this big, you know, and I think it works for him, just for, you know, his character and kind of his style, that he can be so big and dramatic, but it plays really well. And I was excited to see him retain in that triple threat, which was great.
I love how he didn't even win Tough Enough. He got eliminated, what, like third?
Yeah.
And here he is.
The guys that won that year.
Blown everyone away.
Disappeared. But yeah, well, you know, you find... Like, I feel like if you go back to... like, he wasn't always Velveteen Dream. He was Patrick Clark. And I think there are some older episodes... well, you know, from the pre-Dream area, where you can find him like wrestling as a jobber as Patrick Clark. I feel like he might have tagged with like Angelo Dawkins at some point, just as like a random throwaway tag team. But then, you know, he found this character and, you know, worked on it. And then basically that program with Aleister Black a couple years ago just made him. Mm-hmm. And it's just been taken off from there. People were not as into the women's title match, which I think was a combination of the first three matches being so high energy, and Shayna having kind of a grindy style, and people not really giving a fuck about Mia Yim. My wife was very into that match being one of the women's matches, but that was definitely, I felt like, the low point of the show. I mean, it was still fine. Like, I really like Shayna and I really like her style, but
yeah, it was a good match. It's just a standout card.
Yeah, when every match is so freaking good.
You have to have a low on the card.
Yeah, something ends up being the worst thing, whether it needs to be or not. And, like, you know, that used to be, I mean, if you think about the first TakeOver Brooklyn, that was the main event. That was the ladder match main event that followed Sasha and Bayley. Like, they stole the show, and the main event ladder match was kind of like, oh, hum, okay. Yeah. That's fine. But then the main event of this show was something else. Let me tell you something, brother. Well, okay. One, being in the arena, and it was fun. Like, the guys that were sitting in front of us were very intoxicated, but like very fun, very into it, cheering, high-fiving us kind of guys. The guy to my left, like, I swear, spent the first two matches, he was just like on StubHub, like looking at the tickets that were still available for the show he was at for whatever reason. and then there was a dude behind me who was like full fucking internet smart mark, like commentary, like, oh man, I saw Adam Cole 5 years ago and I knew he was going to be the guy and I'm just happy that I was right and blah, blah, blah. And just, oh my God, it was like, shut up, dude.
Oh, just my shut Lord. Up.
Like, Like, he was kind of quiet the first half of the show, and then eventually, like, he was just, like, talking, like, nonstop, I think trying to impress his girlfriend. I don't know. whatever, that didn't matter. But so, people really like the Undisputed Era. People fucking love Adam Cole. Like, oh, my yeah. God. He was definitely a bit more the babyface in that, or a bit more rooted for in that arena than Johnny was. Though, you know, people still love Johnny. But then, after the show, like, all the way out of the arena, down the street for blocks, is people yelling, Adam Cole, baby! All the way. The only thing that I think that stopped us from hearing it more is that we made it to our hotel. It was like a 10-minute walk away.
Oh, my Lord.
Just like Undisputed Era shirts everywhere. People love Undisputed Era. They love Adam Cole. 2 out of 3 falls match, and I thought the first fall was incredible. That was a 20-minute, like, wrestling match that was great, and it did not feel like 20 minutes. The second fall, the street fight, was kind of, like, okay, because they just did a bit of a lap around the arena.
The one guy screaming sounded like you.
Maybe. I did notice, like, one of the arena mics was not far away from me. So, I know I have a distinctive yell, so it's possible it picked me up. But yeah, you know, there was one point where they were, like, down pretty much, like, right in front of us, you know, doing some stuff. Then they got back in the ring, you know, they broke the timekeeper area, did a couple spots in the ring. Like, that section was only 8 minutes. yeah, and importantly, it was not announced in the arena what the third fall was going to be like it was on the network.
Yeah, they showed on the pre-show, they showed off this cage of barbed wire and weaponry and just craziness.
We didn't know. So in the arena, like, that was up, like, they, you know, usually when there's a cage match, like, you can just see it there hanging above the ring, whatever. In this case, they had, like, a black curtain box around it, so you couldn't see it around most of the arena. Like, I only knew that was what was coming because, like, you and someone else I was talking to about the show said something about it in chat at the same time, and I was like, oh, wait, oh, they actually said something, like, oh, okay, that is what it is. And then I noticed the box, and I was like, oh, okay. And I think the people in the very front row could see it, obviously, just by looking up, so they knew, but most
of the arena could see a cage, but I'm sure they didn't know the extent of what it was.
Yeah. Like, you know, that green shirt guy that sits in the middle of every show, every big show with that, you know, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
I noticed him there, of course. But anyway, so, like, when it was, like, third fall, it was like, okay, what's going on? And this cage starts to lower, like, because they were showing, like, replays on the network, and, like, people in the arena were just, like, losing their goddamn minds. Like, just fucking losing, because it was like, oh, shit, here comes a cage. And, like, you know, all these refs came flying out to try to get it set up in time. Like, it was getting caught on the posts, the ring posts. They got it down and set up, and just, like, the crowd just going insane. The first exchange, I think, when they both grab kendo sticks and they're smacking each other and super kicking each other. And, like, everybody is standing up and, like, pounding on, like, whatever is within reach. So that was pretty nuts. That was pretty crazy. The bummer of, like, a hardcore style match in person is, like, when they're setting up tables and spots, and it's kind of like ho-hum, but for the most part, I mean, that was a pretty awesome match. That, I mean, top to bottom, that was a freaking awesome match to get live. I haven't gotten to watch it back yet on the network because I've been watching so much other freaking wrestling, but that was awesome and exciting. And yeah, Johnny had, like, a curtain call kind of thing afterwards, so who knows where he's going after that, Saturday night. Maybe it's time for him to move up finally.
Maybe,
but yeah, it was awesome. It was great. If there's an NXT, well, we'll see what happens if NXT allegedly ends up going to be 2 hours live on Fox Sports. And once that happens, to counter AEW.
Hey, I'm down for a new war.
I mean, man, I am so down for the AEW competition. I am not down for ruining the one part of WWE that I absolutely still love, you know, because the talk is like, oh, if it's going to be on TV, if it's going to be live, then guess who has to be involved with it more? The last person you want to be involved with it.
Oh, true.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes, but
hopefully he stays hands off.
Hopefully. Yeah. He lets Triple H pretty much run most of the show as he has and continue its success, because that's what like that's the kind of show that will actually compete with AEW, not just like SmackDown again or Raw again. Yeah. AEW exists because people are sick of those shows, and they want something different. And they've been, those people probably love NXT. So
because NXT is different.
Because NXT is different, and they put on, you know, they put on awesome 2.5 hour, 5 match shows with quality build up, and just leave it all in the ring. So,
which is how it we'll should see. Be, the way God intended.
The way God intended.
Oh man, but prediction results. I think you did pretty good this weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, I did pretty well. I mean, we had a lot of, we did not deviate in many spots.
Yeah, NXT, I kind of got fucked on my picks because I went all in with Undisputed Era.
Yeah, so I definitely got one over on you there because I stuck with the dream.
Yeah, I was 3 for 5 on NXT. And then SummerSlam, I was 7 for 10.
Yep, me too. I missed, Yeah, I missed 3, so yeah, same for me. I think we had pretty much the same picks.
And then, of course, they had the 2 surprise matches that no one knew about.
Yeah, so, I mean, whatever. Yeah, biggest disappointment for SummerSlam was absolutely, positively, that whatever happened at the end of the Kingston-Randy Orton match,
that was a shitty ending.
Absolute garbage. I don't know. I don't understand. That was terrible. That was just absolutely terrible. So bad.
Aside from that, though, awesome weekend of wrestling.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was great. The G1 Climax finals were great. If y'all WWE watchers remember a little guy named Hideo Itami, he joined the Bullet Club.
Yeah, I saw a clip of that.
Yeah, he joined Bullet Club, and so that's crazy. And Kota Ibushi won the G1, so I'm very excited about that.
Ooh.
My beautiful elf prince. Yeah, Kota Ibushi, formerly of the inaugural WWE Cruiserweight Classic.
Yeah.
Kota Ibushi, who lost in the semifinals because he wouldn't sign a contract.
Which like is Zach a bummer. I was really hoping he would stick around.
You know, with the way 205 Live went for the first like year and a half of its existence, I think those guys made the right decision.
Yes.
Being like, no. Yeah, especially now Kota Ibushi's like on the brink. I mean, Kota Ibushi is so fucking good. Like, that guy is one of the best in the world. And, you know, did not need to be like dragging ass on 205 Live for a year. I mean, I would hope that he would have made it to the main roster, but his lack of English, I think, would have, you know, Vince doesn't seem to care about people who don't have great English.
Yeah.
Asuka, cough. Shinsuke, cough.
Andrade, cough.
Cough. Fucking A.
Well. Anyway, there is some business to take care of. You have a game to talk about. You've been sitting on this one for a little bit. We're finally able to talk about it. Anodyne 2 Return to Dust, developed by Sean Hontani and Marina Kataka, published by Analgesic Productions, released August 12th on Steam for $19.99. Run, jump, and dive across vast, dreamy 3D landscapes. Shrink into surreal 2D dungeons inside of characters' bodies. Travel the world, meet strange people, and save the world from the dangerous nanodust. The follow-up to classic indie Zelda-like Anodyne is coming soon, and it is here now. Tim, tell us about it.
It's coming soon, so soon that it's now, and in the past, as you're hearing this, and as of today, when we're recording this.
Read the copy. I probably should have read the copy before.
Whatever. It's fine.
It was coming soon at the time, but it's here now.
Copy? It's so soon. I mean, I imagine it will be coming eventually to other platforms, as Anodyne 1 did eventually. Either way, it's on PC now and available in Steam and GOG and Humble and all that shit. Anyways, okay, so Anodyne 2. I never got around to playing Anodyne 1, which is a bummer, I guess, as it's been around for a long time, and I'm pretty sure I have. I mean, I know I have copies of it. I think that game was actually initially distributed via torrent. Like, I don't even know if he even was charging for it at the time. Like, it wasn't even like a bootleg torrent. It's just like, here's the game. Here, you can have it.
Wow.
Anyway, that was a long time ago. Maybe I'm thinking of a different game. Either way, irregardless, it's out now on many platforms. It came out on Switch earlier this year. I never played it. I think somewhere I said or read that It might have been in the game, and it might have been like on Twitter around it. It doesn't matter if you haven't played the first game. they are interrelated. There are thematic similarities, but you can play them in either order. So just to kind of huck that out there. I haven't played the first one, but apparently that doesn't matter. But boy, do I need to after playing this one. So the deal with Anodyne 2, this game, the original is kind of pulls a lot from Link's Awakening. It's a top-down 2D adventure game. This game, while it does also have sequences of that nature, it is kind of a touchstone to the PS1, N64, Sega Saturn era of early polygonal 3D adventure games, like your Ocarina of Time, stuff like that. Yeah, stuff like that. And, you know, it was kind of only a matter of time, I feel like, before, as indie developers, you know, for a long time, it was like, okay, we're going to make NES-like games. And I was like, okay, we're going to make Super Nintendo-like games. And then it was just a matter of time before it was like, all right, we're going to start doing some, like, basic polygonal stuff. And going back to that era of games is harsh, if you're going back to those, you know.
I was going to say, visually, those don't really hold up too well, in my opinion. So when I've seen a couple other games that ape after that style, and they visually, they just never sit well with me.
Yeah. So it like, I think this game looks good. I like the style of it. I think it does a good job of capturing kind of like basic early 3D tech without being like bad. You know, like the textures are kind of simple, but you know, everything is like crisp, like the lines in the environment are, you know, they look good, they're sharp. It's easy to move around, it's easy to see what things are, like the character models of the various different characters you run into are weird looking, but like I think in a good way. Like in the initial city, there's a bunch of different like creatures around, you know, some that kind of look like dolphin people, which I think is delightfully weird. There's once you eventually get outside the city, there's like a very basic like car wash, which sounds like a weird thing. It is kind of a weird thing in this game, which has some weird things in it, but you know, it's very basic. Like, okay, here's some brushes, here's some rollers, here's some brushes again. So you get kind of that idea of a car wash, but it's still kind of empty in there. But it, you know, we're not looking at something as lush as like a Witcher 3 environment.
Yeah.
Needless to say, this is a more, you know, think more like Hyrule Field. Like it's a big open area, but it's mostly like flat, and the things, which I think is kind of to the benefit, like the things that you need that need to catch your eye because they stand out in the environment. Like, oh, okay, I can see something over there. I should go over there and check that out. I will need to check that out. So as far as like a 3D platformer adventure throwback, I think it works really well. Like there's some areas that definitely like how, you know, a lot of games that ape NES or Super Nintendo style games, they cheat. They go a step farther and make it look a little bit better. They don't stick straight to those hardware specs. So like, there's one of the initial rooms of the game has like a really cool, like reflective effect on the walls with like some transparencies that like look really good and ethereal, kind of like the, like water reflections in Zora's Domain or something like that. Mm-hmm. I guess was something I would compare it to, but yeah, it looks really nice. Sip of water. So yeah, I think it looks good for going for that style. I do think that it works. It was not off-putting to me, which, you know, something I was kind of worried about. You know, the world is kind of bleak, like it's not super colorful, but that's kind of how the game is. So yeah, what you do in this game? This game is wonderful and heartwarming, and I really, really liked it. So you're this character Nova, who after like a brief kind of, you do like a few quick tutorial things, you're kind of thrust into the game, and the idea is that you are a dust cleaner. So what you do is you have to go around. You're cleaning up this dust from the world. This dust that is at least initially, like, you know, in kind of infecting people a little bit, and bringing them down, and you're there to kind of clean up the dust, initially you're only in like this kind of small self-contained city area. So you go around and you find there's a few different characters you interact with. One of which, okay, so there's a guy you go to where the market is, the food market, and if you look up, you'll see this like weird looking creature like sitting kind of like up above everything, and you platform your way up there. Like, it's pretty basic platforming. It's not too demanding. The platform, you have a double jump, and if you hold the button, you will glide down a little bit to slow your descent. So, none of the platforming, I feel, is too rigorous in this game. You go up there and you talk to this guy. So this guy was infected with dust and is now basically a giant tongue who can taste everything. Oh, so God. He looks monstrous. Yeah. So he has this monstrous appearance, but, you know, he's really, like, in pain. Pain because he can taste everything and he's living an awful existence. So you need to, what you do is you end up shrinking down inside of them, like, to clean out the dust. And in this way, the game is very reminiscent of a Psychonauts sort of game. As you're finding these people, then you're going down inside them, and as you're in there, kind of in this, when you go in them, the game switches from being 3D to being that 2D overhead style. So it takes on, like, an overhead, like, sort of puzzly action thing. When you're in there, there's no combat when you're running around 3D. When you're in the 2D section, like, you have this vacuum that you can use to suck up objects or some enemies and then shoot them back out. And as you shoot them back out, enemies will drop health and they'll turn into dust, which you need to collect the dust for later on. So yeah, you kind of go through these mazes, you solve puzzles, and you clean out the big dust at the end of it. And sometimes there's a boss fight, and sometimes there isn't. Usually the boss fight kind of takes the shape of, you know, this one weird-looking dust creature that flies around the screen. You got to shoot it a few times. And as you're going through, like, with some, you know, you kind of learn more about the character's predicament or something about that situation. And then once you finish, you know, you then clean the person, you've emptied the person of dust, and they are better, and then usually they give you, they hand out cards. Cards are, this is apparently something that's carried over from the first game, I found out as I was poking around the internet a little bit. And so once you have enough cards and enough dust, you go to this machine in the center of the city, which, as you put your cards and dust into it, and then that pushes, like, this giant dust cloud that's covering the city further back. So you do that once, and then, like, you can go out of the city, and then you can start exploring the surrounding areas. And as you explore the surrounding areas, you find more people with more dust-related issues, and you need to shrink down inside of them, do these little, you know, 2D puzzle dungeon things, and that's kind of the basic flow of the game. You do 3D exploring, and then you go down into these little dungeons, basically, clean the people up, come back out, power up the machine, it expands more area. That's how it do. But it's just... like, everything about it is good. Everything about it is good and satisfying. Like, the, you know, the 3D exploration and platforming, you can, right off the bat, you can turn into a car. I don't know why, but you can.
Okay.
I'm not going to question it. You can turn into a car, and then you can move faster around the world. Like, the game is not about, like, withholding things from you for no reason. And I say that as something that kind of permeates the game design. Like, on the main menu, literally there's an option for click here to go to the walkthrough. It'll just take you to a web page with, like, hints for how to get through the game. Huh. If you go into the options menu, you can set yourself to infinite health. So if you're having trouble with the combat or something, you just won't die, and you can just make it through the game. You know, it's there to be accessible for people and fun. Ooh.
That's really cool.
It is really cool. It's a good philosophy to have, and you don't need to turn that stuff on. You don't need to go to the walkthrough, but if you need it, it's there. And they, you know, they say like, hey, if you need more help, go into our Discord and ask, and we'll help. You probably won't need to do that pretty soon because other websites are going to have walkthroughs and stuff up. There'll be videos up on YouTube to get through. But I like that that stuff is baked into the game, so you can just click something on the menu and go get help if you need it. So everyone should be able to get through this game, no problem. It's a game for everyone. And it's worth playing through, for sure. Like it, at that level of casual, like, you don't want to be challenged because, like, the writing is really good. The writing is so good in this game. It's been a long time, I feel like, since I've played a game and just been like, man, like, the character monologues from characters that you need to help. From just like descriptions of like what's going through Nova's mind from time to time, just like any descriptions of the environment, kind of like what's going on with characters, like what problems they're experiencing, like, you know, information about this particular area, like it's all just like just so well written. It's such a joy to play through and just see this stuff. It's done really, really well. And it's fun to play besides that. Like, I think the most stuck I was is there was a card I couldn't find. In like kind of the one, like there's three areas open outside of the first city, like when you first push back the dust wall. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't find something. And I'm just like, goddamn, like, where is it? So, okay, if I just drive around, I'm sure something will catch my eye, and I kind of look up and I'm like, oh, well, there's something up there on that cliff. Like, there has to be a way for me to get up on that cliff, I'm thinking. So sure enough, like, I kind of like poked around, followed the cliff, and then I was like, okay, I see there's a spot where I can jump up here and walk over here. And yeah, like if you look around a bit, you can get through. Like, I don't feel like anything is unfairly hidden for a game that doesn't have like a super detailed map. Like, it doesn't put waypoints on your HUD or anything like that. You just kind of got to explore and look around. But usually, I think they do a good job with the points of interest, just naturally coming out and jumping to your attention.
It's been all praise. Do you have any negatives about
the game? No, I really don't. I really don't. It's like one of my favorite games I've played this year.
Wow.
So far. And it's just like I think the difficulty hits like when you're in the dungeons, as it were. Like, I think the puzzles hit a nice sweet spot where I'm feeling like just challenged enough that, you know, my brain is getting something out of it. You know, I enjoy like just figuring out how to get through the rooms, and it's not always obvious, but you know, there will be like these grass like door barriers, and it's like, okay, well, it popped up, it's blocking the way. Well, like, what do I have to do something in this room to get it to come down? And then I'll walk out of the room, and the rooms just reset when you walk out of them and back into them. So then I'll walk out of the room, walk back in, and then I might see like, oh wait, the door is down right now. I must have done something that caused it to go up and block the way. So what do I not need to do? It's like, oh, I can't kill this one enemy, or I can't do this one thing or touch this one thing. That's the trick of this room. Okay, I get it. You move forward. Yeah, I think it looks good. I think it looks good for what it's trying to do. I mean, it's not like friggin' pushing the hardware, you know, of a PC. Like, it is hitting that vibe of late 90s polygonal 3D action game, except, you know, with a good camera and like looks good and smooth and like all those problems, you know, kind of ironed out, like those just base problems. And yeah, like just to come back again, it's just like the writing I just feel is so good, and that like really pushes things forward and just like wanting to see these characters. There's a very good positive vibe to the whole game in like solving people's problems. And kind of your two like mentor characters are very encouraging towards you. Like, there's no like, oh man, don't let me down, don't disappoint me. It's, I'm sure you're gonna do great. Like, you're gonna be fine at this. And it's just like refreshing in a weird way. Like, I don't know if like, man, do I just need this? Do I need this hug right now that you're giving me Anodyne 2? Maybe I do. And there's a a little later on, maybe a mild spoiler, there is a pro wrestling mini game. Believe it or not, where you have to like work a match. And you're not like, it's not like a wrestling match. You are working, you're putting on a worked fight.
That's fantastic.
The what the hell is it called? The dustbound showdown or something like that. It's pretty good. Yeah. And then, so story takes some turns, you know, maybe everything isn't as it seems. Nah. We'll see. But, this game's, I think something that people should check out. The only reason I could think that someone shouldn't check this game out is if they are just absolutely totally turned off by the visual style. Like, if you just can't take that, then sucks to be you. I think like the 2D overhead stuff, that looks great and fine and nice and sharp, good pixel art animation. Like, that's all great. It's only, I guess, if you're really against kind of the more emptier 3D environments that we had to deal with 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Which, should you snub your nose at this? But I think the gameplay is good and satisfying. Like, the writing is very good. The music, it fits the tone of the game very well. I just did a magic trick. Oh, there it is. I thought I made something. I thought I made something disappear. I'm fidgeting with Legos here as I speak. That's Anodyne 2. Yeah.
So I'm guessing you're giving it a buy it.
Yeah, that's a buy it. That is a buy it right there. Like, it's not a, you know, criminally short game. Like, it's probably going to be, if I had to guess, like between 5 and 10 hours for most people. There is a speedrun mode, which I turns off the, I didn't try it because I am not a speedrunner, but it says it turns off like a lot of the dialogue sequences. So you don't have to like mash through cutscenes or anything like that. Just gameplay. And it, you know, keeps track of your time when you're in the menus and such. So
that's really cool.
It could also be a cool, it has nice speedrun stuff built right into it as well. So yeah, it's well worth checking out. All worth checking out. Good game. Very good game. Very happy.
Awesome. Well, Tim, thank you as always for coming on, chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words?
Oh, shit. I did have a final word. What was it? I don't remember. I don't remember. It's been a long weekend. I am pretty tired. I didn't get like good sleep the end of last week. And then I went to Toronto and then I saw wrestling and then I slept at a hotel, which is always weird. Just hotel air. Today's my birthday and I'm like, I had an opportunity to just kind of sit and relax and play games in the afternoon. I fell asleep for 2 hours. I was so damn tired.
Well, happy birthday. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I almost just said happy birthday to all and to all a good night. I just said it anyways. There you go.
All right. Moving on. Jacob Garner's here. Jacob, how are you doing?
It's been a long day. Kind of tired. How about you?
You know, one of those days. Just, you know, doing this. Talking to you.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how was your weekend?
It was okay, I guess. I mean, my youngest turned 2, so, yeah. Yay.
Oh, I'll insert applause in post, I guess. I'll peek the microphone if I clap.
That's about the only time you've ever peaked, Joe.
I'm doing it away from the microphone, so I don't even know if it's picking it up.
It really just sounds like you're slowly jerking it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right. That's yeah. Yeah, nobody needs that. Anyway, so we should probably dive into all the stuff.
What do you want to start with?
Well, so my oldest son, who's 5, I just got him started on video games. I mean, he's played, what was it called, Ink on the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. He played that with me. We controlled the controller together and stuff like that. This weekend was kind of like also letting him have some independence with it. And so like I was going through my games and I'm just like, all right, well, actually, let me reverse this. So pretty much, it actually all started when my wife and I were back to school shopping. And she was like, oh, well, we have to buy headphones for him for kindergarten. And I'm like, what? Why the fuck would I need to buy headphones for kindergarten? That's dumb. Like, that doesn't make sense. And she's like, oh, well, they use, like, iPads and tablets and stuff like that in kindergarten sometimes. So, you know, the kids are expected to have, like, earbuds or headphones. And I'm like, what? Like, they're letting the kids use, like, tablets and stuff like that? Like, my kid is... I don't think he's literally, I think he has never touched a tablet before. The only time he's ever been allowed to use our phones is when my wife is trying to sleep in the morning and our youngest hasn't woken up. And so, like, my oldest will come in and just be like, oh, can I watch cartoons? And so she'll just, like, toss on, like, Netflix and, like, throw on, like, My Little Pony or, like, Chip and Potato or Puffin Island or whatever the hell it's called on Netflix. And, like, he'll just sit there in bed next to her while she's sleeping, and he'll just sit there holding the phone and just watch the cartoons. I've never let him play any games on my phone or anything like that. And so it's just like, you know, we're discussing the headphones, and I'm like, oh, shit, like... You know, I've been on computers since I was three. And I'm just like, oh my God, have I been holding my kid back? And the answer is probably. So, you know,
nice.
Already feeling great. And so I'm just like, you know what? I need to get him into video games, like, because the other kids, I'm sure, have played stuff. Cause he already goes to kids in preschool who have seen Venom and Deadpool, which I'm like, why, what? Why is this a thing?
Yeah, like, kids shouldn't be seeing.
You're 4 years like old. That. Why have you seen Deadpool? Like, so anyway, I'm going through my Xbox 360 and Xbox One games that I can download, and I've got like 500 odd games in my library, and I realize there's pretty much like maybe three that I feel like he'd be able to start on. And that list is, Daytona, by Sega. I forget what the whole name is. Is it Daytona 500 or
Daytona USA?
There you go. Daytona USA, Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing Transformed, and the Maw. And I went with Sonic and Sega All-Stars, cause he's watched me play it a bunch. He thinks it's great. And we get it started and, he just can't do it. Like, trying to manage being able to drive for the first time and the power-ups is just way too much for him. Even when I'm just doing, like, time trials for him, and, like, he still can't manage it. So, okay. So I'm like, all right, buddy, let's just get out of this, and we'll fire up Daytona USA. And he gets on it, and... It's still too much. Like, he's constantly crashing into the wall, or like he's going the wrong way. And I'm like, bud, like, you gotta turn it to, you know, you gotta get back on track correctly. And he's like, how do I do that? And it's like, well, you know, turn right. And so he turns left because he's five and like the concept of knowing left from right is still not, you know, all there. And I'm just like, bud, now you're like,
dude, okay. I'm 38 and the concept of left and right is still not there all the time.
Listen, Ashley considers it to be a good day when you have pants on. So
I agree.
And then like, you know, okay, well, you're going too far left now. And so he goes right, still manages to be in reverse or, you know, be going the wrong way. And the screen's, like, flashing, like, you know, wrong way, wrong way, wrong way. And, like, that's getting freaked out. But eventually, he managed to do two laps on the easy course all by himself before he's just like, screw this, I hate this. do you have anything else, Dad? And so I fired up the Xbox 360 game, The Maw, which is classic by Twisted Pixel. You know, because it's easy, it's generally non-violent. Any violence in there is slapstick. You know, nobody really, I mean, except for the things that the Maw eats, like, nobody gets hurt, kind of. Anyway. Yeah. So he gets through the first level, and it takes about an hour because he can't stop trying to run up hills, despite me being like, "Bud, like, you have to follow the path that, you know, the only path that is in front of you that is green. You just need to walk on it." Oh, there's a hill over here. Like, he keeps like sliding down these hills, and it's just like, "Oh my God, bud." It took him 60 minutes to get through the first level, and it was really, really painful to watch. But at the same time, I was just so damn proud of him. Cause he pretty much got all, like, he gets the mechanics of it. He understands the puzzles. He's not able to do everything just yet because the controller is still kind of big for him, even with the limited button pushing that really has to happen with it.
Yeah.
So tonight he completed the second level with a bunch of my help. I pretty much got him through like the main level issues and you know, like the traps and stuff like that. I got him past those. And he pretty much just walked from point A to point B and feeding the little pink things to the maw. And he's doing better. He's doing a lot better than he was on the first level. So, I mean, as long as I'm there to help him with, you know, some of the trickier things, you know, I think he's going to move through this pretty well. And he really enjoys it. So, yeah. I'm psyched. I mean, next step above for this would probably be like Lego Star Wars. So,
yeah, the Lego games are always good for stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the latest stuff is kind of, even that is still like Lego Marvel Avengers and stuff like that. I still think that that's kind of, I mean, it's definitely not like the Lego games I was playing.
Oh yeah. The Lego games have gotten a lot more complex. I guess the classic Lego games are right. Good for stuff like that.
Yeah. Definitely like the original batch of Star Wars Lego or Lego Star Wars games. So yeah, so that was pretty much my weekend in relation to video games.
I was kind of asking about your weekend, thinking that it would segue into the movie that you wanted to talk about.
Oh, that one. Okay, sure. Well, I didn't know what order we were going to bring stuff. We didn't really discuss it before the.
I didn't before we started recording either.
Well, whatever.
Well, we're already 10 minutes in. So,
oh my God, we're already 10 minutes in.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm Joe. Hey. I record 3-hour podcasts.
Listen, but asshole.
I'm going to whine that you're on here for 15 minutes.
You're part of the reason it's a 3-hour podcast.
I am proud to be part of that 3-hour podcast. Oh, all right.
Okay, so you want to talk about the movie Detective Pikachu. Pokemon Detective Pikachu. Who is the studio behind it?
Legendary Studios, and I believe WB also helped release it, I believe.
Cool. It is available now on home video format, DVD, Blu-ray, 4K.
And digital.
And digital, of course. Prices range depending on what option you want to get. Whether it's like the $14.99 basic ass DVD for you boring people, or if you want to get like the $34.99 steelbook at Best Buy, like some dipshit would buy like that, like me. Which,
but at least it's gonna look pretty, you know, for like the one, like for, you know, for the 5 seconds that you spend looking at the cover.
It does look good.
Yeah, what's on the cover?
The alley scene with the dude and Pikachu at the bottom. And then on the back is just a big picture of Pikachu.
Okay. Fair enough.
Dick, you didn't think I'd answer.
Well, no, I know you would answer anyway. All right.
So tell us about Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
So let me preface this that it is a weird movie. Like it is just, it's a pretty weird movie. And for somebody who has loved Pokemon since like 1997, I think 98, I forget when it
whatever
like really anyway. Hit. Anyway, you know, seeing it in live action It actually takes a while. Like, I was, one of the things I was kind of surprised with the movie is like how much, you know, even though like I've played the video games, I watched the anime, I've seen the anime movies, seeing it in live action, it really required a lot of suspension of, you know, disbelief with this movie. And it took a while to really adjust to actually like, oh shit, that's a Charizard. Like, there's a Louder over there. You know, oh damn, here comes some Bulbasaurs. There's a Ditto. Like, all this other kind of stuff. Like, it was just, it was a lot to take in. Now, admittedly, I was, you know, under the influence when I saw it. So
shocking.
So, you know. I will say this, it's a weird ass movie, which I feel like I've already said a couple times. Mm-hmm. Now imagine that you take a Pokemon movie, give it the aesthetics and plot of Blade Runner, and then mix in a little bit of the plot of the 1989 Batman movie in with it. And yeah, that's pretty much it. With Ryan Reynolds making PG rated jokes that you would expect from, like, you know, a PG-rated Deadpool movie.
Oh, God.
Which was not, like, I remember the interviews, they kept talking about, like, oh, I made some adult jokes that, like, would have really gone over the kids' heads. And it's like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, man. But, like, pretty much it was standard fare. I'd actually feel okay with letting my oldest watch this. So anyway, we're introduced to this kid whose name I don't remember, because I'll be honest, he's really not that memorable, which is kind of unfortunate. But then again, you're here for the Pokemon, not the humans. It's like a Godzilla movie. Yeah, there's human characters, but nobody gives a shit. Like, you're here for the Pokemon, obviously. So anyways, his dad is a detective in a different city. And his dad gets killed, and so he has to come, you know, talk to the police about it, you know, go back to his apartment, and he finds out, and he finds his dad's partner Pokemon, which was a Pikachu, and he discovers that he can talk to it, and the Pikachu's voiced by Ryan Reynolds, and the two of them decide that, you know, his dad probably is not actually dead, and they have to go investigate it. And, you know, of course, there's like a shadowy corporation. There's this drug that's on the street called R, you know, which makes Pokemon go psycho and stuff like that. You know, heavily implies that it's leading towards like a Team Rocket kind of thing. But yeah, so they go off to investigate it. They also meet this plucky girl reporter and her Psyduck, who, you know, is one step away from being like a ticking migraine time bomb.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I love Psyduck. Actually,
yeah, Psyduck is pretty great in this movie. I really enjoyed him.
Yay.
And, you know, you get to see a ton of different Pokemon as they go through and, like, you know, try to find out, like, is his dad actually dead? What's the big mega corporation? You know, what are they hiding? All this other kind of stuff. And it leads to a pretty satisfying ending that it ends up involving Mewtwo. You know, I'm not giving any spoilers. You're like, we all saw this in the trailer. So if you didn't see the trailer by now, shut up. That's your own fault.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, it was a pretty satisfying movie. It actually threw a curve at the end that I wasn't expecting. And looking back, I mean, maybe I should have expected it, but whatever. I was plenty entertained. The Pokemon look gorgeous in this movie, and honestly, it was a blast. Like, there's tons of fan service in there, with all the different Pokemon that get featured, and, like, the different stuff that they do, some of the certain moves that they, do in it. The part that really got me, was that, there's a scene with this, kid walking out to a Pokemon battle, like, out in the stadium. And it perfectly mirrors that Super Bowl ad that aired for Pokemon's 20th anniversary.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember that. Like, the same exact part where, like, the kid's walking out onto the field. And I was just like, hell yeah. Like, that's awesome. That, like, you know, it's all these, like, little tiny references that, like, the super fans are going to get. And I thought it was just really cool.
Well, what is your official verdict on it?
Yeah, definitely go check it out. I mean, it's just, it, as I said, it's a weird movie. I'm glad that it's a step that they took in trying to figure out how to do live action Pokemon movies. Because when they first got announced years ago, I was like, I don't know what the hell your plan is. I don't like, I don't think that this is going to go well. But it was a lot better than I was expecting it to be. The Pokemon look gorgeous. And, honestly, as I said, I'd be willing to let my 5-year-old watch it. There was one, speaking as a parent, there was one scene, which involves like it's an environmental action sequence. Like it's pretty much like a landslide, that's happening. I thought it might be a little too intense, for kids like 5 and younger. But other than that one scene, I was just like, yeah, this is perfect for my kid to watch. Kids will like it. Adults will like it. I definitely recommend it. And honestly, if you're going to watch it under the influence, it's a good film. Clocks in under 2 hours, and there's plenty to stare and laugh at. So
nice. Well, we got to get the show back on track. Talk video game reviews. You do have one game to talk about. This is going to be kind of a mixed review because Dark Mika wanted to talk about it as well. So she wrote in a review. We're going to banter off it, but the game is The Forbidden Arts, developed and published by Stingbot Games, released August 7th on Xbox One, Switch, and Steam for $14.99. The Forbidden Arts is an action-adventure platformer with a focus on discovery and exploration. You play as Phoenix, a young boy who seeks to master the element of fire in a grand adventure of ancient magic. Let's see what Dark Mika has to say about this, shall we?
Sure.
She says, The Forbidden Arts is an action platformer. You play as a young man named Phoenix who wakes up to find suddenly he has some magic in his system. He's told he must go on a quest to find the other magic users so they can teach him more magic so he'll have better control over his powers. It also turns out you're pulled into much more important plot, namely that necromancer magic user is trying to create an army to take over the world, mwahahahaha, or something, time to kill him. Some of you have been paying attention may recognize this as a little. I did a preview of it a long time ago on episode 351. It just got a full release on Xbox One and Switch with PS4 release in the works as well. If I remember correctly, my preview was only of the first couple of areas and maybe a single boss. Now there are many, many more areas and I think 6 bosses. So it sounds like there's a good amount of content to this game.
Yeah.
The graphics have had a large jump to them from the dungeons to the hubs to enemies. Honestly, a few areas I went back through and I didn't even recognize them anymore. They were so different. Everything is much more fluid looking, whereas previously everything was made of square blocks. Now most of the world has curves to it. Hills instead of jumps and drops. It's a lot better looking. Did you want to touch on the graphics at all?
I mean, I thought they looked really nice. I wasn't as much of a fan of like the 3D world area graphics. I think they definitely could have used some touching up. It kind of reminded me of Fable from like God when it was released back in like what 2006,
something like that.
Yeah, like graphics on that level. It's not a particularly graphics heavy game, however. The 2D world areas looked a lot better. But yeah, I thought it looked nice for what it was.
Yeah, I thought it was a good looking game too. I do agree that the overworld could use a little bit better of a look. Just, I don't know, the fog in the draw distance seems kind of small, but there was pop in here or there. It's nothing bad though. It's pretty good looking.
I mean, for a one man show.
Yeah.
I thought
definitely it was impressive.
Yeah, it's definitely impressive for a one-man show. I don't know. I was not a fan of the 3D overworld sections. Granted, I realize it's a glorified map, but it's like there wasn't as much to do for something that I don't know. Like, I almost would have rather just have had like a simple map to do or look at to move.
It's nice to find the gold to explore, but once you do that, there's really not much purpose on the overworld map except to go from place to place.
Right. And it's just like when my initial feelings on it, I commented that it felt like the game didn't know what it wanted to be. Like, for your 3D overworld map, it felt like a poor man's Fable. But then when you're in the 2D area, it felt like Legend of Zelda 2 mixed with some Prince of Persia stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I could have done without the overworld area, but...
I at least appreciate that they threw the gold on the overworld to give you something to look for.
Yeah. I mean, it gives you something else to do in the game.
Yeah. Dark Mika continues that the dev also added something I wanted from the start, a mini-map for dungeon exploring to help you figure out what the hell you're looking at, which you can toggle on and off. He also adds limited voice acting and some cutscenes into the game. The enemies have gotten some hitbox modifications and as well as attack speed modifications to balance the game a bit better as well. I wish you could look at the entire map instead of just the mini map. I wish you could the view button and pull up the whole thing.
I hated the mini map. I never found it helpful. And I mean, Joe will tell you I'm the worst video game player ever.
Yeah.
It's a running joke. But this game, I found the mini map to be absolutely useless. And of course, because the game's just released and, like, it's new, there wasn't even a guide up online, to help navigate anything, which the dev says that he's working on. So that'll be nice to eventually get that up on the Steam page. But it actually got to the point where I had to have Joe hop on. I had to stream the game on Mixer and then have Joe watch me play and tell me, oh no, you need to be going over there.
Yeah.
I literally got lost in the first area because it looked the same and it was areas I thought I'd already been through.
Yeah, I could definitely use a bit more help with navigating some areas. I thought the second dungeon was a lot more linear and easier to follow.
Yes. The second dungeon was a huge improvement over the first area that you have to go through. Yeah, the first area I was furious at with the game. And then the second one, I was just like, okay, this is definitely laid out heck of a lot better. The enemies aren't nearly as cheap. And there seems like it felt like there was an actual rhythm to that level, which I did appreciate.
Yeah, it's funny. You really didn't like the game at first when.
Oh my god!
When you first got it, you got the review code that we got for the game. Obviously, we get a review code to cover these. You weren't really a fan of it, so I ended up picking up the game myself. I paid the $15 to get it myself to try it, and I really enjoyed my time with it and couldn't figure out why you were having such a hard time playing it and why you weren't enjoying it. But watching on Mixer and seeing you struggle with it, I could kind of understand why. Just because it clicked with me doesn't mean it clicked with you.
Right. And the thing was, is that it's just like, there were small gripes here and there, you watched me struggle trying to jump over a box,
Yeah, I was laughing at you.
Yeah, I know. and it was just like, oh, you need to hit right just a little bit more. And it's like, fuck you, Joe. I am jumping and going over right. And, he's just like, he wouldn't climb onto the box. And it was just, oh my god, there was that. And it was just the enemy, for the standard, fantasy hero who's going to, save the day, this guy, can't fight for shit and, is knocked out with two punches.
Yeah, you can obviously increase the health bar through some of the side dungeons that you can do in the game. But I think early on, it's way too easy to die, and it could easily turn some people away from the game.
Yeah, well, it was one of the things I absolutely hated about it, because... obviously you're supposed to practice jumping and using your flame powers and slashing with the knives and stuff right against little thief guys, but it's just they can kill you in two hits, and it's just or some things just they aren't obvious as to what you're supposed to do. in the first level when you have to scare off the griffin, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
The solution isn't immediately obvious to you, especially when the fact that you are able to double jump over what that griffin, like the size of that griffin. Even if you took hit damage, you should still have been able to jump over it, but the game won't let you. And so instead, the griffin just pushes you to the left, so you either fall into the brambles or you jump away from it. Or it just, claws you and kills you. One of the two. And it's just I get that there has to be a level, some trial and error with this game. But damn, man. The first level, I feel like, is going to be a turnoff for some people. If you're willing to slug through it, I honestly think it's, there's plenty to enjoy about this game, but there's also plenty that's going to drive you up the wall.
No, I can agree that the game has some rough edges to it, but I didn't have nearly the issues that you had getting through things. It just, I don't know, I guess I'm just better at the game than you.
Well, that's all right. I'm still better than you at Wartech Fighters.
Yeah. Dark Mika continues on. Almost every issue I had with the game in the preview has been fixed at this point. The only slight annoyance I have left is there's no health bars for any of the enemies, but you quickly learn how many times you have to hit them to kill them. Where I had the biggest issue was bosses, but I found most of them have a few hits for each different attack wave they have, which made that issue, kind of a non-issue. The game now, as a full release, costs $15 on every system and likely costs the same for PS4 when it comes to that. I think it's worth it. If you're good at it, it might take 8 to 10 hours. I put in 26, but I was also faffing about a lot, seeing if I could break the game for my own amusement. I'm not a big fan of platformers, but I rather enjoyed this. The art style was really cute, and the story is okay. It's not something to write home about.
It's standard, and it was one of I remember I got angry at the plot, which admittedly I didn't like. I was lumping that in with everything else I was getting angry about. It's your standard generic fantasy storyline. Ancient evil that everyone has long forgotten, how evil and terrible it was, is making a comeback. And, oh, by the way, we don't know what happened to the one guy thousands of years ago. I'll bet you he's going to be the final boss.
Blow my mind for sure. But yeah. her final sentence, however, one part of it will always stick out to me. Billy the Big Titty Goblin, if you get the game, you'll understand why when you meet her. She's fucking fantastic. So that is something that we have to look forward to further in the game. Billy the Big Titty Goblin.
I look forward to meeting the Big Titty Goblin. My only other complaint about the game was the music, and perhaps that's, just because I got stuck on the first level for so damn long. I didn't find the music particularly memorable, and to the point where it was kind of grating. I don't know if you felt the same. It was just...
I was fine with the music. It served its purpose. It's not a soundtrack I would go blasting in my car or anything, but it didn't bother me. I could see why you would want something maybe more upbeat or more memorable, but didn't bother me.
Yeah. I mean, again, the game seems like it's going to be a work in progress for the guy. I mean, not like a work in progress, because, obviously he's finally released it.
Yeah.
But it's something he'll continue to tinker with, so.
Yeah. Personally, like I said, if you could add in the ability to view the whole map, let me hit the view button to pull up the whole map and not just the tiny little mini map, because sometimes you need to know where the fuck you are and where the fuck you need to go.
Yeah, that, I'd also suggest doing something where your hero has more life or doesn't take damage so easily.
Some balance also, would be good. A little bit better balanced.
The only other thing that I can really think of while we're still reviewing this, first level where you're doing your Prince of Persia antics with the, spikes that come out of the wall and stuff like that. The detection on some of that was complete bullshit.
I could do without the climbing sections in the game.
Oh, I mean, first off, I was, I'm not going to say I wasn't a fan of them. I didn't mind them, but the thing was is that it's just like there were some sections where it was completely obvious that I was not touching anything, and I'd still get knocked off and take right. And so it's just like, I don't know if he needs to go back and work on like the collision detection or whatever that would exactly be
maybe
called.
Adjust the hitboxes.
Right. But it's just like that and like just having like no health whatsoever that just drove me up the wall. Maybe even something as simple as just like an easy mode for the game. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that would make it easier for people who, you know, are just starting on it, so they wouldn't get driven so up the wall about the first level.
Yeah. Anyway, we do have to move on with the show. Jacob, always good having you on here chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Nah, not really.
And finally tonight, we're bringing in Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
This is your podcast. You've probably been telling people that for like an hour now.
I have, but you know, it's been longer than an hour.
Reiterate for the people one more time how you're doing.
I'm doing wonderful. I don't remember what I answered the other times, but I'm doing good now.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
So that's all that matters, really.
Yeah.
The here, the now, the present.
Yes, and the presents.
Yes.
I don't know. Are there presents?
I wish.
Hoping. Aw. Every day's a present.
I guess so, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Optimism over here. Every day is a gift to me.
But it's sometimes you want to like re-gift it or return it. Sometimes it's just a burden that takes up space in your closet. So there you go. I'll balance it out for you.
Life is like an old tablecloth sitting in your closet.
Yes.
Okay. That makes no sense at all.
An old tablecloth. Have you been gifted a tablecloth?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I think for our wedding, I think my mom got us a brand new tablecloth.
Goodness.
Yeah. She got us a bunch of stuff for the house and whatever else.
See, so. If that counts as a gift, then every day counts as a gift.
Okay. Every day is a gift.
Every day is a gift.
And that's not just being optimistic.
No, it's... Okay.
It's been confirmed.
Yeah, yeah.
Scientifically proven.
Exactly.
Anyway, should we talk about games?
Yes, let's talk about video games. I'm starting to get depressed.
you got two to talk about this week. The first one is called Pix the Cat, developed by Pasta Games and Playdigious, published by Playdigious, released August 8th on the Switch for $9.99. Pix the Cat is a critically acclaimed intense arcade game that will challenge your reflexes and your wits, pitting you against your friends and the world in a race to the highest score. Chris, tell us about Pix the Cat.
Pix the Cat. Well, I didn't realize it was so prestigious. I'll tell you what, though.
Critically acclaimed.
Critically acclaimed. Wait, I'm a critic. So if I acclaim it, I see how this works.
Are you going to acclaim it?
Yeah, I think so. Pix the Cat is a puzzle game very much in the old order. That is to say, it's going to remind you from the outset as looking a lot like a combination of Pac-Man and also... So what's that worm game where, you know, or Snake, I guess, where... You remember on the old Nokia phones they had it where you were just a line and you, like, moved around, and the longer you moved, that was like Snake. So that's kind of what this is.
Oh.
So yeah, you play as the titular cat pick, or what? I don't know. Is that his name? I actually don't know.
Cat. So I would assume his cat. Name is Pix.
Yeah, I guess it must be Pix. So yeah, Pix is kind of a weird, ghostly looking cat. I don't know how else to describe him. He looks slightly translucent. So I don't know what the story is there, but basically you in the regular arcade mode, you start off in a playing field, which is laid out with, you know, space you can move on, and of course obstacles between the space. Again, largely it's going to look like any kind of like maybe a Pac-Man map or something like that, but you know, a little bit different. And somewhere on this map, there are a bunch of eggs and there are a bunch of circles, and they call the circles something, but I've already forgotten what it is. But as Pix the Cat moves through the eggs, they hatch into ducklings, and those ducklings, of course, follow their new mom, Pix the Cat, around the map until they are deposited into the holes, whereupon a new level opens up. And this is where it gets, like, there's a third element to this, and it's kind of Inception-y, because, like, you can see a smaller version of the next level somewhere in the present level, and that's where the portal is to that level is going to open up, and when you travel through that portal, that tiny level, you know, blows up to regular size, and then you start that level, like, immediately, like, smoothly. Mm. So it actually has this kind of, like, cool psychedelic effect to it, which I quite appreciate. Makes things a little disorienting getting into that next stage, although it allows you to anticipate without getting in the way, like, what the next stage is going to look like. So I actually am in favor of this odd move. So yeah, basically the idea is to get as many of the ducklings following you as possible before you start depositing them into the little portals. And if you do that, then your point combo raises up, and you get point multipliers and things like that. And you want these not only because that's the name of the game, you know, is to get as many points as possible throughout the levels. Higher points unlock more things in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that I was averaging about 4 or 5 unlocks per game, there's quite a lot of content that gets gets kind of dug up. The one I was really going for required 750,000 points in the main arcade-style game, and it's called the, I think, like, the Nostalgia game or something like that. I'm, like, really hoping that it's some 8-bit version of what this is, but I couldn't unlock it, so I'm still working on it.
I believe
it. Yeah, but so I was really hoping to get to the nostalgic part before anything, but I did unlock a whole lot of stuff. There's actually an arena, which is, you know, obviously I can't describe it in too much detail because it's a multiplayer thing, and obviously I don't have any friends, so and I didn't have the wherewithal to detach the two controllers and play against myself. Such a thing is frowned upon in society. But I do know that the arena has several unlockable levels, and you can play with 2, 3, or 4 people. So this is this has a little party game built right in. And yeah, the arcade version has several modes. Like I said, getting back to the gameplay, the main thrust of the challenge is, like I said, as you progress through these stages, then, and you keep getting these eggs, like, you could have like 20 little ducklings following you. The problem is you can't cross the ducklings. See, that's where the snake part comes in.
Mm.
So what ends up happening is if you, like, bump into your tail, you're given, like, a little bit of warning to, like, change directions or perish. But, and this happens often, you could end up, like, trying to, you know, get that last egg or whatever, and then accidentally trapping yourself inside of your own tail of ducklings. And if your character is trapped, then all of the ducklings disappear. Ah, come on. I told my phone not to vibrate. That was my phone. There we go. But yeah, if the ducklings, like, succeed in trapping old Pix the Cat inside of, you know, his own machinations, then they all disappear, and you can leave the level, but then it penalizes you with the overall game timer. So you're kind of racing against the clock, as it were. Mistakes, of course, make the timer go, you know, knock seconds off the timer. I believe there's the timer, like, goes up or resets or something like that, or, you know, throughout. But for sure, if you either run into an obstacle, like a spiky wall or something like that, like something that's an obvious danger, or again, trap your Pix the Cat, then yeah, then that spells bad for you. And of course, once the timer is done, then that's game over, and then they tally up your score and, you know, send you a flood of unlockables, which, again, I'm sure will subside at some point, but I haven't seen it do it yet, so. But
they keep them coming, right?
Yeah, I know, right? Of course, a lot of it was arena levels, and I was like, oh, that'll be nice someday. You know, but all going to work towards that nostalgia mode that I'm really looking forward to checking out.
Yeah. But overall, $10 on it. What do you think?
$10. I mean, this game, look, here's the thing. Ever since I started playing video games, it's like, and, you know, I started playing these types of go around the track and, you know, collect the things type puzzle games like Pac-Man. You know, they were all kind of born out of Pac-Man, and they're almost all universally better than Pac-Man. I'm not a Pac-Man fan, is the thing. Therefore, when I say that this game is extremely good, know that this is coming from somebody who doesn't actually like Pac-Man. And I actually do think that this game is really, really good. What I like about it is a lack of a kind of random element. You know, you really can plot out the course of your gameplay here, which does make it a little bit more puzzly than, you know, straight up action. I really like the diversity in the levels. There's like a lot of, you know, they really change it up, and like they change up the thing mechanically even sometimes. And so I really appreciate that. And I really like the amount of modes and the multiplayer aspect. So yeah, all this for $10. Oh, and the fact that it looks great. I mean, whoever did the graphics on this was really, you know, they're really putting in the hours. So, you know, I do appreciate that. So yeah, I give this a recommendation for sure. $10, buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Final game to talk about tonight is called Tap Skaters, developed by Digital Melody and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released August 8th on the Switch for $4.99. Feel the speed, show your skills, and perform incredible tricks. Take on the challenge to defeat rivals, gain fame, and show everyone that you're the best skater of them all. Chris, are you the best skater of them all?
I should say so. No, that's not true at all. But, yeah, so Tap Skaters is a, again, it's kind of a, you know, a, what would you call it? Kind of an auto runner platform puzzler, something like that. So, and it, you know, goes stage by stage or challenge by challenge. What it is that you have a skateboarding kid who is going downhill towards an obstacle. And the one button in the game, you know, just the A button, will cause your character to change directions and drop down one level. And then, of course, the slope underneath will be in, you know, either a left or right, like, kind of direction. And then your character will turn around and will start going in that direction, either in the opposite direction or the same direction, just again, depending on where that slope is relative to the other. And like I said, these all end up looking like a big, you know, Donkey Kong level kind of thing, you know? And the key is to be able to drop down the levels and know which direction you're going in before you can hit the obstacles that are on either side, plus obstacles that are kind of thrown at you as you're proceeding. And of course, you get... It's very much a game of, like, looking ahead a couple of spots and trying to figure out, you know, what you're going to do extremely fast, of course, while gravity is running against you. So, you know, sometimes it'll be, you know, you'll drop down going down to the left, and then, you know, when you go down, you'll be facing to the right. But then the next, like, three platforms will be very narrow and also going to the right, so you have to get down them very quickly. And then maybe the one underneath will have, like, other skater punks, like these other skateboarding kids with, like, skull masks on. You know, they'll be persistently going down that one slope, and so you gotta get, you know, you gotta time it to where you can get between them, and then, you know, of course, just keep going. So certain, in the kind of, like, overall, the regular game, you know, it has different challenge modes and different goals, which start off with something like drop down 10 times and then you're done. And as long as you can hit that checkered flag, then you're good. But sometimes you get into a versus mode where you have to get to a certain point before a computer player, or you can play versus mode with a second player and actually get it going. You know, again, if you're the type that has friends.
Yeah.
But, And then, of course, as you're doing this, you can collect coins and, I don't know, cool points, something like that. It's some points that just change your title at the top of the screen. I actually don't know what further significance they have. But I do know that with the coins, you can purchase new skaters, of course. And there's, I think, 18 total, and the most expensive one cost 10,000 coins. So they really locked away stuff for, like, the hardcores in this game. And then, of course, there's, like, rooms that you can or, like, decorations for the room that you are in for the title screen. Again, not sure what significance that has because I've been unlocking characters this whole time. But, you know, lots of things to do. And like I said, that's kind of like your career mode option. And then let's see what else is there to it. There's an endless mode, which is actually really good for farming coins. That's just where you can just drop down endlessly and it just kind of changes the stage as you go. What I appreciate about this game, of course, is that the first set of levels, like, they change backgrounds and, like, the whole set, like, all the time. But the first few levels actually have arrows pointing in the direction that you're going to be moving once you get down there. So that really gives you a good sense of, you know, what to predict. And of course, they take that away in later levels so that you have to go by just knowing based on the slope, like, where you're going to be going, because you're not going to be rolling uphill at any point. Yeah. It's all downhill from here. So yeah, it's just it's a tight little game. It seems to have a lot of content to it, and it's literally one button to play it. So, I mean, it's kind of a fun for all ages, definitely something to while away a few minutes to an hour on, you know, or just kind of bang your head in frustration at the harder levels for a while. But I dig it.
Nice. Overall, $5. What do you say?
I mean, $5, I say, why not? I mean, you know, this is one of those kind of games that's definitely a good, a very good, like, break from, like, the more intense sort of games. Like, let's say if you're playing, like, an overly complicated Western RPG for which you're trying to learn all the mechanics, then you could just take a break with Tap Skaters for a little while. And, you know, and have fun. Oh, and by the way.
Oh, Lord.
I mentioned the one button, you know, that drops you down. You can also actually just tap the screen, which of course gives it its name. You can also just tap the screen to tap down, or, you know, to drop down. So
that works.
Yeah. So there is a switch element to this. That is to say, something that's exclusive to the platform.
Hooray for exclusive features.
Huzzah! Touchscreens. Coming soon to the Xbox One, apparently.
Oh, God.
We'll have you see. Seen their new, have you, you've seen their new
I
controller?
I saw the patent for it, but who knows if it's actually going to happen or not.
Hey, I mean, look, I hope it does. They need something different, I think. And, I mean, why should Switch get all the fun?
We'll see. Time will tell. But that is it for this episode. Chris, thank you as always for coming on and doing your thing. Thanks to everyone else who came on and did their thing as well. A lot of people on this episode. I don't feel like naming all of them. I'm too lazy.
What's in a name?
Yeah, really. I mean, I said their name when they were on, so that should count for enough, right?
That's close enough for podcasting.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Think you're playing a song of mine, right?
Yeah, tell us about it.
Okay. So my band, Gimmick, you may have heard of them. I think we debuted a song on this podcast 6 years ago.
Something like that.
Something like that. Cause we were working on a thing at the time, but now we're like, we've gone DIY with it. So we've kind of completely started over again last year, and we're tracking our album, which has a title. It's going to be called Shooting Stars.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's going to be kind of a best of our early years that we had when we had Mike Lobos Villalobos, aka Lobos Jr., on bass. But now I'm the bass player, so I'm kind of pulling double duty for this album. You know, in parentheses, Secrets, Lobos is going to be on it too.
Ooh.
But anyways, ooh. So yeah, we actually have been tracking. We've got a few songs complete, so we decided to go ahead and throw three of those songs onto a kind of an album preview slash EP-ish demo sort of thing. We printed a few CDs. We actually have not released this digitally yet, so if you're out there in internet wonderland and you're not one of the 12 people who have picked up a disc so far, this is going to be a first, kind of like an exclusive for you. So this is actually our long, long, long time live show, like, regular feature, and that is to say it's several songs from the game Rygar on the NES. And this is as good as we can do it. So it's 9 minutes long, just about, but, you know, y'all that have seen us play live already know that. And there are going to be more such medleys, as well as small songs and surprises and stuff we've never done before on Shooting Stars, which is coming out either this year or early next year, just depending on whether we can get all our guest stars on Bubble Bobble, you know, aligned. Because Bubble Bobble is going to be an epic. We wouldn't make you wait 6 years for it without making it huge. So,
oh boy, I can't wait to hear more on that one.
Yeah, this is going to be a very excessive debut album, and I mean, y'all deserve no less, because people have been freaking waiting for way too long on this thing, myself included. So Rygar is just a taste of things to come, and we hope that you enjoy it.